This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. And now, here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is Senator Gail McGee, Democratic Senator from Wyoming. Before coming to the United States Senate, Senator McGee was a college history professor, and he holds his Ph.D. in history from the University of Chicago. And during his career, he has been a champion of free speech. Recently, the senator has been holding hearings in Washington on the use of radio and television by extremist groups of both the right and the left. Now, if you'd like to ask the senator a question on tonight's topic, do we have the right to smear people, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. Just dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere in the United States collect. Please make the call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Our guest tonight, Senator Gail McGee, Democratic Senator from Wyoming. Senator, what is a smear?
Well, a smear is using a name that is not complimentary to detract from the character of someone that disagrees with you, rather than meet an argument or an idea with a counter-argument or another idea, just call him a name. He's a communist, or he's a traitor, or he's a spy, or he's immoral. You call into question his patriotism, his loyalty, and his character. These are the general categories that we refer to when we speak of the big smear.
Is the smear being used in radio and television in the United States today?
Oh, it's being used now on the radio and in television in some instances. It's being used often in print, cheap paperback books of one sort or another. The big smear has always been a technique of those who don't have time for facts. It's been used throughout history, but it seems to be proliferating at the present time.
Well, now, what type of person would use the smear technique?
Well, in general, it seems to me that it's the kind of person that runs out of ammunition. When you can't destroy another argument with a better argument, then you try to destroy the character of the person that's advancing the argument.
Well, now, how does an individual know when he's hearing someone being smeared on the air?
Well, it's easy to search the adjectives that are being used to describe it. When, for example, as one group does, describes former President Eisenhower as a communist aiding and abetting the Russian cause. This is a smear of a very distinguished American. When they use the same description as a traitor or a red to describe the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, this is a smear that has nothing to do with the basis for one of his judicial opinions.
Well, many of these groups tend to blame all of American ills on the communists. Do you think this is a realistic approach?
I think it's not realistic at all. The communists are a menace in their own right and ought to never be taken as a joke. In fact, they're so serious that it's a real disservice to the country to run around calling everybody that you disagree with a communist or every idea that you oppose as communistic. It simply confuses the issue. And communism as an argument is simply a substitute for thinking, or anti-communism, I should say.
Well, now, where does the money come for the broadcasts on radio and television of this type of smear?
Well, it comes from lots of sources. Some of it comes from some people that are well-to-do. There seems to be any number of guardian angels that will contribute to such causes. For what reasons, I guess the psychologist could explain best. Some suggest that a few of those who have a great deal get the rather narrow point of view that the best way to keep it is to sponsor some of these is gained by open solicitation in radio appeals on the programs. And one of the best ways to loosen the purse is to frighten the person that's listening at the other end, scaring them into believing that the country's about to go down the drain, or that the end of the world is in sight, or that something else is so desperately wrong that only by their sending in a dollar or $5 or whatever it may be, is there a chance to reverse the tide of destruction.
Now, some of these people use the word Christian quite frequently in their broadcast. Are they sort of cloaking themselves under the guise of the cloth?
Well, that's one of the more popular approaches. Most of the people in our country are God-fearing people. And therefore, to cloak anything in the name of religion, no matter how valid the act itself may be, is one way into to win your way into the support or the receptibility of the individual that may be listening to what you're saying. Just as communism is, if you raise the specter of communism, you often can trigger a listener to follow your argument much more readily. Because most of us are very much conscious of the worldwide threat of communism, and thus it makes us ready to accept any argument that is disguised as anti-communist.
Our guest tonight is Senator Gale McGee, Democratic Senator from Wyoming, and we're talking about smear broadcasts and telecasts, the type of show that attacks prominent Americans. Senator, how many stations carry this type of broadcast?
Well, at the present time, the closest reading that I've seen taken within the last 4, 5, 6 weeks is that there are approximately 4,000 stations carrying at least one of these programs, with this type of program, and many of those are carrying several types of these programs.
Well, now, why do the stations carry something that's obviously a smear?
Well, I guess the program managers of those stations could probably answer that best of all. In some instances, some of the stations are owned by individuals that really believe this sort of thing, and they're out crusading their cause, and they devote the station's efforts to it. But I suspect that in an overwhelming number of cases, usually the majority, that it's another way of earning another dollar. After all, the stations are private enterprise operations, and they're in this for income, as they properly should be. They're in it to make a profit. And there's a great deal of money available in this field. And if you can sell another 15-minute interval to one of these groups, it's an easy dollar.
Well, say I were smeared on a radio show. Do I have any recourse via the law?
Well, yes, you do. If it's on a regular on a radio show of any sort, you have recourse to if it's in the form of character assassination, to the usual laws of slander and libel of that sort. If it's simply harsh treatment in the political realm, you have access to the equal time provisions of the FCC's regulations, provided it's a civic race, political race of some sort, of community.
Well, now, recently, the telephone has come in for some criticism, it seems to me, by your committee. There was a group called Freedom Ring, I believe, or Let Freedom Ring, and they have been putting telephone calls throughout the United States, attacking such things as the PTA. I'm sure our position in Vietnam may have come under their guns. Is this legal or illegal?
Well, there's nothing that covers it, really, at the present time. The program Let Freedom Ring is simply one of the newest wrinkles among the many gimmicks that some of these groups have developed with the modern communications media having become what it is.
Well, how does it work?
Modern marvel in mechanical ingenuity. Let Freedom Ring operates by taping or canning telephone messages. In their case, they limit them to 2 minutes. And then by a very aggressive and a very attractive advertising campaign in a local community, after hooking up their little gadget in the telephone system, you are encouraged through all kinds of gimmicks and come-ons to dial a certain number. When you dial that number, automatically play back to you over the phone one of these messages on whatever the local issue is, either the local PTA or the local law enforcement agencies or the some larger issue, such as what the university may have done last week in regard to Vietnam demonstrations. Any question that they think will have local appeal can be cranked up for one of these telephonic tapes.
All right, say I am attacked via the telephone. Can I have a recourse under the telephone?
Until we started the hearings on this subcommittee, you had no recourse, largely for the reason that these telephone messages were curiously anonymous. Unlike a radio program or a television program where the identity of the individual peddling the program was always clearly established, on the Deluxe Freedom Ring programs, there is no identity of the voice at the other end or the person sponsoring that voice from that community. They cloak themselves in anonymity.
So they're actually hiding.
They're actually hiding from identification. Now, when we asked the gentleman who invented this this gimmick why they had to hide behind this anonymity, the gentleman's name, incidentally, is Dr. Douglas from Sarasota, Florida. His casual explanation to the committee was that these people are handling controversial questions, and if their identity were known, that they would be physically attacked and injured or killed by those who disagreed with them.
And not much faith in our law enforcement, then, if they...
Well, it's the kind of conspiracy world, I'm afraid, that some of them live in, plus the fact that they claim that the true course of patriots and patriotism is to hide behind this kind of screen of secrecy in order that they may purvey their brand of patriotism. But I had to remind the doctor on that occasion that American patriotism has certainly sunk to a new low if it has to be cloaked in secrecy, that whatever else, Patrick Henry didn't happen to hide his particular identity, Tom Jefferson didn't, Sam Adams didn't, that one of the marks of true patriotism is a willingness to stand up and be counted.
The courage of your conviction, then.
Well, it you bet it is. If you're afraid of some kind of harsh action, why, there may be something else that's wrong. Most people in public life or in any community kind of activity has that, at least a modest kind of risk that he has to undertake because there are cranks and kooks everywhere. You never know what may provoke them.
Our guest tonight is
Senator Gale McGee, and he's the Democratic senator from Wyoming, and we're talking about the right to smear people. Is it possible to smear people on the telephone? Should people be allowed to say things about government and issues without standing up and being identified for their beliefs? What is free speech? These are the topics we're looking at tonight on Night Call. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
5 gold rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
She's downright greedy.
Who is?
The girl in that song. 12 gifts, and what gifts?
Well, people like different things.
I'll say, 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. That I like, a partridge in a pear tree.
Oh, it's just a Christmas carol about gifts. Bit different, perhaps.
Well, certainly that, all right. 6 swans are swimming, really.
And what about your gifts?
Well, I'm not giving anything like that. Besides, I think there's getting to be too much gift-giving.
Oh, I don't know. Christmas began as a gift.
You mean the baby in the manger? That's different.
No, it's not. We needed that gift to show he loves us and cares enough to share our life here. And our giving shows that we care.
With a partridge in a pear tree.
Oh, for goodness sake, that's just a song. But it does have the right idea about Christmas being a time for giving.
I suppose now you're going to sing all the rest of the 12 verses.
Yes, I am. On the 6th day of Christmas, my true...
This is Night Call, and here is host,
Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People, and welcome to Night Call. Our guest tonight is Democratic Senator Gail McGee from Wyoming, and we're talking about smearing people, whether or not an individual has the right to smear another individual over the radio, over television, or even through the telephone. If you have a comment to make or you'd like to ask a question of the senator on this topic, give us a buzz at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us here. All you have to do is call our national Night Call number. That's area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. That's area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. If you get a busy signal, please do not become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. Area code 313-846-6601. What are you thinking about tonight? Senator, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Nathan Beatty. Good evening, Mr. Beatty, and welcome to Night Call, sir. Your comment, please.
Good evening, Senator McGee.
Good evening.
Don't you think that we slander people in other nations and other governments? For example, we call Hitler a madman. A fourth of the people of Germany, Austria, Poland, and those countries were unemployed as Hitler was coming to power. We call Hitler a madman that starts the war. Now, how could he have employed those people without slandering and starting a war? When one side slanders the other side, it builds up a kind of opposition to the other side, and then they cut off freedom of speech to the other side, and then they promote wars by slandering. Don't you think that slandering other nations is even worse than slandering people within a nation where they can protect themselves?
Senator?
If I may address myself to the last part of that question first. First of all, we have a higher standard of life here, and I think the crime probably is a little more serious here at home in the personal sense, due to the fact that we ought to know better. We're far better educated. Often the smear is the technique of ignorance in many cases. Therefore, I wouldn't quite agree with the conclusion of Mr. Beatty on that score. However, I agree with you that there should not be this kind of name-calling overseas either. We shouldn't attach these epithets to somebody in another country. Now, these things come quite naturally and all too easily in time of war because of emotional drives and hatreds that war foments. But it doesn't help to solve the problem, and it doesn't even address itself to the facts of the difficulty by substituting a name for the other fellow. Now, I wouldn't want that reply to be taken as my acceptability of Mr. Hitler. I happen to think the things that Hitler stood for are not the kinds of things that civilized societies would readily accept as their standards of life. But I don't think you need to call another man a name in order to establish that his way of life is not the one that ought to be copied or emulated.
But without spending for war, how could Germany have come out of the Depression? How could we have done it? Now, as to our standard of living being higher, it is higher, and when we arm and force other nations to arm, or when one nation forces the others to arm, like Germany, it created jobs in Germany, paying her people to make guns and carry them. It took the surplus off of the market, surplus of labor, and surplus of commodities. And that's what we did, and it's what we're doing now. But omitting the non-productive spending by the national government, how could we avoid unemployment? How could we have come out of the Depression, or how could Germany have done it?
Well, I think the first thing to remember is that Germany has a higher state of employment today than she had under Mr. Hitler. Germany's hardly at war today. Likewise, she doesn't have a Hitler or the Nazi system as their form of government. I think it's a fallacy in argument itself to reason that because Germany had unemployment and then they went to war and that was the solution to unemployment is the excuse for going to war. There are many things you can do about unemployment. We licked the question of unemployment in the without going to war. War came after that hurdle had been passed. There's no necessary connection between war and unemployment. There's no question about it. War does reduce unemployment, but so do other efforts reduce unemployment. It isn't, there's no necessary cause and effect between the two.
Mr. Beatty, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
I would just like to say that we doubled our production and raised our standard of living after we put 12 million in the armed forces in World War II. So if they were not unemployed, I don't know what they were doing. And I think that it is the non-productive spending that is creating markets and jobs. And I think we need a better way to do it.
Mr. Beatty, thank you for your opinion, sir. Mr. Nathan Beatty, a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, who felt that slandering foreign nations and individuals in foreign countries is just as bad as smearing people here in the United States. Senator, I have a caller standing by in Kalispell, Montana, a listener listening on KGEZ, Mr. Noel Johnson. Good evening, Mr. Johnson. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening. Senator, I'd like to say, in preface to my remarks, as your good neighbor from Montana, that
how's the weather up there tonight, incidentally?
Any extremist group, whatever.
Yes.
But I would like to ask you this. Do you not believe in the right of free speech in this country? And do you also not believe that the federal communications system has an unfair grip on radio and television that they do not have over newspapers?
Well, first, I certainly do believe in free speech. But freedom of speech does not include the freedom to destroy another man's character. We have laws and regulations that generally govern that sort of thing. And in no case do I believe that you ought to bar any of the groups we may be talking about from being on the radio or sounding off with their ideas on TV or in the newspapers. They all ought to be heard. The extremists to the left, the extremists to the right, ought to have their day in the court of public opinion. We're simply interested in making sure that they all observe the same rules of the game in order that the casual listener may have the full spectrum of alternatives about which he then can make up his mind. And in regard to the FCC and the radio and television parallel that you would draw with the newspapers, may I remind you that there are statutes and laws that do regulate the general level of attacks in all of those communications media. But I would place radio and TV in a category quite different from that of the newspaper, and I think most of our experts in the field would agree to that exception. That is, in a newspaper, you have something that's far more local with a more limited impact, with the measure of countering it there available on the home front. The possibility of competing newspapers in particular, or starting a newspaper, a throwaway sheet or a weekly, is far more readily accessible to an individual than starting a TV station. The difference is, I think, quite obvious.
Well, it has long seemed to me that the federal communications system is originally set up has jurisdiction over the airwaves and the communication system from the standpoint of interfering with other stations and all that, but not as to censor the things that are said on the radio stations.
Yeah, but I don't think the issue here is the censorship of what is said beyond the realms of common decency, that is, so that it isn't obscene. The issue is how to keep them in balance. And again, the proposal is not to put any of these programs off the air or to put them out of business. They all ought to be heard. It's just important because of the great penetrative capabilities of modern communications media like radio and TV, that the listener at the other end have access to all of the points of view. This alone can permit intelligent judgment by the individual. It's not censorship at all. Let them all be on. make sure that you keep it in balance so that the alternatives are available.
Mr. Johnson, may I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Do you feel, do you agree with the senator on his position here that there should be a balance in the type of political broadcasting that a station carries?
Well, not entirely, sir. I feel that the radio stations are being unfairly limited as to what they can do in the free enterprise system. From the standpoint that an individual owner of a newspaper, for example, can print entirely one type of editorial if he wishes to, and a radio station, and I'm not a radio station man, can only say certain things without giving free time to the opposition side of the question.
Well, I think, again, you come back, if I may respond to that, Russ, you come back to a different level of between radio on the one hand and the newspaper. Radio and TV both are geared fundamentally to entertainment. Thus, they build up a listenership that the newspaper really can't match. And they have opened up the channels of reaching into a home that is not available to the man that runs the newspaper. But the Herbert Hoover, I think, was the gentleman's name that invented the idea that the airways belong to the people. They belong to the general public. And he foresaw in those days when he was Secretary of Commerce in the 1920s the tremendous capabilities and power of communication through that means. And those are licensed out, not to private enterprise. They're licensed out to all kinds of people, to educational institutions, to church groups, to business groups, to lots of people. But they have a public responsibility, and it's vested with the public interest. And it's in the public interest, then, that we have set up a sort of referee in that game that we call the FCC.
Mr. Johnson, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and expressing your opinion, sir. Good night.
Well, thank you and good night.
Mr. Noel Johnson, a gentleman from Montana, who feels that maybe radio stations are being put upon slightly by the FCC, that they are being made to toe a mark editorially that they should not be made to toe, that they are not given the same freedom that a newspaper has.
I should have added on that, Russ, that the radio stations and TV stations both are being encouraged now by the FCC to editorialize. Editorial policies represent a relatively new development in the communications media field at present time.
I once heard it expressed this way, Senator, that newspapers, newsprint was available to every citizen and ink, but radio airwaves are limited as far as the number. So this is one reason why you must have a greater gradation of opinions on radio and TV than you can on the printed page. Our guest tonight is Senator Gale McGee. He's the Democratic senator from Wyoming. And we're talking about the right to smear people on the radio and on TV. And I guess in print, too. If you'd like to join us here at Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season.
That's silly. Fa-la-la-la-la. Honestly, what does it mean?
Well, it's a happy sound.
Like ha-ha and hurrah?
Right. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la.
You like Christmas, don't you?
Well, don't you?
Yes, but you go overboard.
And why not? I enjoy the fun, the music, the gifts, people, homecoming, love, the whole bit.
I wonder how it all got started.
God started it. You know that.
Well, you mean Bethlehem, the manger, the star.
What else?
But that's religious. What's that got to do with fa-la-la-la-la?
Everything. Every time we celebrate Christmas, we remind ourselves that God is with us, sharing everything, no matter what. Now, that's a pretty happy thought.
Fa-la-la-la-la?
Yes. And do you mind if I finish my song now?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly. Thank you.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People, and welcome to Night Call. We're talking tonight to Senator Gail McGee, Democratic Senator from Wyoming. And our topic under discussion here is, do we have the right to smear people? What do you think? Do you think people should be allowed to get on the air and attack anybody and everything? Do you think that people should be allowed to use a telephone to libel somebody and then not identify themselves? Just have people call and put an attack on a recorded message on the telephone and then take off without ever having to be responsible? What do you think about freedom of speech? Do you think that the word responsibility should be tied in with this freedom? Well, these are some of the things that we're talking about tonight on Night Call, and we invite you to join us here. You can by dialing area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. In other words, you may reverse the charges. Now please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And if you get a busy signal, don't become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. Area code 313-846-6601. Senator McGee, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana. Listener on WFBM, Mrs. Mary Holman. Good evening, Mary. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
I see we've lost that line, so we'll just remove Mary's call right now. And, Senator, why do these groups tend to feel that a conspiracy is being handled or being pushed down on America all the time? Why do they use this term conspiracy?
I suspect that the more likely explanation of their conspiracy thesis is that it's the simplest solution to a lot of complex problems. A second explanation is that conspiracy invites more interest, sharpens the excitement. And if you can imagine that there's a conspiracy afoot, I think you can intensify your own interest. But fundamentally, it appeals to the quest for quick and easy and simple explanations of things that sometimes really defy understanding.
Senator, I have a caller standing by in Boulder, Colorado, a gentleman who's listening on KTLN out of Denver, Colorado, Mr. Gale Shaw. Good evening, Mr. Shaw. Speak right up and welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello.
Your comment, please, Gale.
Yes, I would like to question the Senator as to when this sudden enforcement of the fairness doctrine came into being.
Yes, the fairness doctrine in the FCC actually had its first expression around 1948 or 49 down at the commission. And it was, it sort of lay dormant for some time after that. There, like many new ideas, it takes time for them to germinate a bit and to run the range of open discussion. But it reached a new peak of concern about 1959 and 60, and the concern in it has been mounting ever since.
Gail, you got another question.
Isn't it true that it started being regenerated or enforced as a result of the Ruther Memorandum to Robert Kennedy in 1961?
Well, I can answer that very flatly. The answer is no. That I myself can described for you an exchange between myself and the chairman of the FCC in 1959, trying to get this out into the open desk again, the desktop, in order that it might be examined very carefully. So I would go back further than you would on that.
Well, you made the statement that it was easier for a TV or radio station to get in the home than it was a newspaper. Now, the American people still have a right to turn their radio and TV off. They don't have to listen to it.
Oh, indeed, that's certainly true. They don't have to answer the telephone, and they don't have to pick up the newspaper. The point is, we do. Radio and TV, as I said earlier, is geared to entertain. And we all enjoy good radio and good TV. And therefore, we tend to have it on. And this is not enough to say that you don't need to have some general broad outlines of policy to protect the public interest. By the same token, we say that a man can't walk into a crowded theater. It's against the law to walk into a crowded theater and shout fire because of the possibility of producing panic. Well, you could argue with your logic that you don't need to go to the show. That's your choice when you went to the show, so that's the risk you're taking. But we do know what people's habits are and what their appeals are, and for that reason, we believe that some of this is reasonable in the public interest.
Gail, may I ask you a question? Do you feel that an individual should have the right to attack another individual via the telephone and not be identified?
I want some clarification on what attacking means.
Well, say that you claim that... All right.
The issue there is the anonymity rather than attack. You have a right to attack anybody with words if you're willing to bear the consequences.
Yes, that's
correct.
Right.
I agree with that.
Gail?
Now, the matter of smear, of course, the senator mentioned Mr. Hoover. Now, I think there was a man that was probably smeared more every presidential election than any man ever lived. In radio, television, or anything, and even today. And but as far as attacking people, I believe that if the facts are true, we should be allowed to expose these things. And as I said before, I don't believe that they should be anonymous. If a person has information which is valid, he should be willing to stand up behind it.
Gail, how does an individual know when information is valid? How does an individual know when something is true?
Well, that's a good question. I ask myself this every time I pick up on a national magazine.
Well, for example, one of the greatest weaknesses some people have is running around calling the guys they disagree with communists. Now, that's a pretty serious charge. I think most of us know what a communist is and how he operates. And that makes it all the more a serious charge. Most people that use that phrase, however, probably couldn't tell you what a real communist is or what the mark is that would make this man a communist in his mind. He doesn't like what he believes. And I think there's a case of smear.
Gail?
I couldn't hardly hear that last, but I got just the general drift of it.
Well, the last was that the person that uses communist as a smear word against somebody he disagrees with, generally, or in overwhelming number of cases, I'm sure, wouldn't know what a communist was if he saw one in most cases. Well, that this is a derogatory phrase for which he would have no substantive basis at hand at all.
Well, do you really consider... calling a person communist a derogatory phrase today?
Oh, I would, I don't know, most phrases wouldn't be any more inflammatory than to be called a communist. I happen to have a very low opinion of them. And there's nothing that stirs me up more than to be called that.
The rule that they can hold office in labor unions, and if this is so, then it can't be too derogatory a remark.
But I happen to think it's a pretty derogatory remark.
Well, I would have to agree with you, Senator. This is my feeling. I don't agree with the name-calling, but I do believe in placing facts.
Well, facts are one thing and names are the other, and I think that really is the issue at stake in the so-called big smear.
Well, Mr. Shaw, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and expressing your opinions. Yes, go right ahead, sir.
How do you spell your Gail?
Pardon?
How do you spell Gail?
G-A-I-L.
You're G-A-I-L. I'm G-A-L-E. I always ask that question. I still get mail, Miss Gail McGee, you know, because I spell mine the girl's way.
That's an embarrassing name.
We ought to discuss names some night on Night Call. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. And Mr. Shaw, thank you, sir.
Bye.
Good night. Mr. Gail Shaw, a gentleman from Boulder, Colorado, expressing some of his opinions on smearing and the right to identify or know the identity of the individual that might be attacking you. Let's go out to Casper, Wyoming, Senator. Lady from your home state, Miss Kathy Pope, and she's listening on KVOC in Casper. Good evening, Kathy, and welcome to Night Call, ma'am. Your comment, please.
Yes, I work for the phone company in Casper, And I quite agree with Senator Gail McGee on his backing against this so-called slaughter against, or slanderism against, different politicians and just people in general. I frankly know from working down there that we are governed by the FCC so strictly that we don't dare look cross-eyed at anybody. And I don't see how possibly they could get any of these tape recordings on their phone without the company's knowledge.
Senator, is this possible?
Well, we had AT&T testify for us before our committee hearing, as well as the spokesman for the independent telephone companies as well. And both of them told us that the only devices that they knew about, that they could know about in advance, were those that they themselves sold. And they kept track of them because they sold them. But that there were any number of other devices that they had no way of knowing about unless or until somebody complained about them or reported on them. They had no way, up till now at least, that they've been able to check them out. The result was that AT&T couldn't tell us today how many of these devices were currently in use on the telephones. They could tell us only about the ones that they happen to know about.
Ms. Pope, are they using this type of tape-recorded telephone message in Casper?
I haven't come across any as being an operator or anything, or making any personal calls here in town, or into the state of Colorado. I haven't encountered any at all. But to me, well, it's like when you have a phone first put into your home, you put a deposit on your phone. That is for damage, deposit, and usage. All right, if you do harm to that phone, like if I decide to put a tape recorder onto my phone, I know darn good well the phone company would kick up a stink about it.
If they discovered that it was there.
Right.
Yes. Their all problem, right, you see, is deleting it.
They are doing, really, they're misusing what the phone is supposed to be for. And
well, now the telephone company does sell these, they make or rent these gadgets. I think they told us they have about 30,000 of them now, but most of those are used for business phones that are answering service, or they're used for weather reports and that kind of time reports, that kind of information. Most of them have not been abused.
Ms. Pope, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and expressing your opinion tonight.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you. Here's Miss Kathy, I beg your pardon, that was Miss Kathy Pope, a lady from Casper, Wyoming, listening on KVOC. Our guest tonight is Senator Gail McGee, and we're talking about the right to smear people. Do you have the right to smear people on radio, on television, and over the telephone? Well, these are some of the questions that we're asking tonight on Night Call, and we invite you to join us here and express your opinion on this particular topic. Area code 313-846-6601. Give us a call and let us know what you're thinking about. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen.
Who was this King Wences?
Not Wences. Wenceslas.
Oh, I always thought it was good King Wences last looked out.
Oh, really?
Well, anyway, what was he looking at? The Feast of Stephen?
No, that was when he was looking. It was a religious festival, the Feast of Stephen.
So what was he looking at then?
He was looking at a poor man gathering firewood.
So?
So the king and his servant brought the man in, threw another log on the fire, and shared their meal with him.
Oh, I get the message. Christmas is a religious feast, and we're supposed to invite somebody to eat with us.
That's right, especially somebody who might otherwise be alone at Christmas.
But just at Christmas? Hey, that's a bit phony, isn't it?
Well, you have to start sometime.
Like Winking Glass.
Wenceslas. Do you mind?
Would it matter?
No. Good King Wenceslas looked out on the Feast of Stephen.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight is Senator Gale McGee from Wyoming, Democrat from Wyoming, and his committee has recently been investigating the use of telephones and the use of radio and television by extremist groups of both the right and the left in the United States. And if you'd like to ask a question of the senator, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere and you may reverse the charges. Area code 313-846-6601. Senator, on the air, in the beginning, we were talking about some of the extreme right groups and extreme left groups that are using radio. Would you care to name any of these groups? I mean,
the most commonly heard across the country generally fall into two types: those that are that use religion as their vehicle, and I don't want to get into the arguments between the fundamentalists and the other religious groups, and the other, the anti-government conspiracy boys, as I call them. Now, in the religious group, you find gentlemen like Carl McIntyre. His program is 20th Century Reformation Hour, and he broadcasts them, I think, 5 days a week on over 600 radio stations in most of the states.
Now, does he address himself to...
The victim in his attacks most of the time is the National Council of Churches. This group is led by communists. It's a communist conspiracy in toto. He also has described the Catholic Church, and I quote directly from one of his broadcasts, as the harlot church and the bride of the Antichrist. Now, another of these who uses religion as his vehicle is Billy James Hargis. His program is called Christian Crusade, and he generally employs pretty stiff language in describing those he disagrees with in that category. In the other front, namely the anti-government front, the conspiracy front, you find the Mannion Forum. It's run by former Dean Clarence Mannion. It runs out of South Bend, Indiana, and it's simply called the Mannion Forum. Dan Smoot, who used to run H.L. Hunt's Lifeline, now has his own show, the Dan Smoot show. And then Kent and Phoebe Courtney down in New Orleans run the Conservative Society of America, and they have a show on the air, The Independent American. It takes the same name as the little newspaper that they published. So these are some of the specific types of shows that are regularly on the air.
Well, now, recently in the committee, you mentioned the Reverend Carl McIntyre, right?
McIntyre,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
And now, as I recall, he was a defrocked Presbyterian minister.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, now, don't these people have a right to express their opinion?
Indeed they do, and they ought to be heard, and nobody is trying to put them off the air or to investigate these individuals or what they say. And I think that ought to be made clear. What our concern is that as McIntyre may attack, let's say, the Council of Churches, or may attack the United Nations, as they have on some occasions, that the counter point of view on his attacks ought likewise to be heard, so that the viewer is not saturated with a one-sided point of view, and then let the listener or the viewer make up his own mind. I think that Carl McIntyre ought to be heard by everybody. But as they listen to him, they ought to listen to other sources of information as well.
Senator, would you say that we're getting an overwhelming amount of comment from the far right versus the far left on American radio?
Well, at the present time, there's a great preponderance of the far right. Now, back in the 1930s, the preponderance lay mostly with the far left, but we've gone through that cycle, and we're going through now this spasm where the far right almost totally dominates this kind of thing. There's very little of the far left at the present time. That doesn't mean they won't come back sometime, and they need to be watched with as great a care, merely to make sure it's kept in balance.
Well, Senator McGee, I have a caller standing by in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mrs. Margaret Owens. Good evening, Mrs. Owens, and welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please.
Harvey.
Your comment, please.
My comment? I can't hear what you're saying.
I'm sorry. Would you like to replace the call?
Well,
we can hear you fine if you'll speak up and make your comment.
Do I need to replace it, or just...
Well, if you can speak up a little bit louder, I think we'll be able to hear you, Margaret.
Do I need to replace the call, or shall I just hold on?
No, if you'll just make your comment right now, ma'am.
Thank you.
Hello, Margaret?
Yes?
Will you make your comment, please?
Yes. I would like to say that I listen to Net Freedom Bridge here in Baltimore, and I think that it gives the people an opportunity to hear speakers who will tell you things that don't get from the newspapers or the magazines, but I think everyone should have the opportunity of hearing both sides of things so they may judge for themselves whether they want to hear the speakers that are only talking on one side of the question, which are the ones who are getting the publicity, the magazines, television, newspapers, etc. I think that you should be able to hear the other side also, and the newspapers, etc. do not do that. I think Freedom Bridge does give the opportunity to hear speakers that talk on the other side and not any
Senator, would you care to comment on that?
I think that Margaret Owens is right, that if she wants to listen to Let Freedom Ring, she should have that right to listen to that, and other people who want to should. My only complaint with them is that those statements on Let Freedom Ring should not be given over the telephone without identifying the voice that's making the charge. And I would require in my bill that the voice be identified in the message. That's all we ask, so that the voice will meet the same tests of responsibility and the tests of truth and accuracy that the libel laws and the slander laws that regulate radio and TV and the newspapers insist upon.
Mrs. Owens, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Mrs. Margaret Owens, a lady from Baltimore, Maryland, who feels that Let Freedom Ring is a good thing and that it does express a different point of view and that it should be allowed to be heard. And then, of course, Senator Gail McGee agreed. Let's go now to Torrington, Wyoming, our listener on KGOS, Mr. Kerm Kath. Good evening, Mr. Kath. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Russ. I'd like to pose one question to Senator Gail. First of all, in Gail's opening remarks, he made the comment that there were 4,000 stations carrying what were described as mere program. According to a recent issue of one of the trade magazines broadcasting, there are some 4,013 AM stations on the air. Now, I was somewhat amazed by the fact that perhaps there are only 13 stations that are not carrying mere program, and I was wondering if the actual figures were correct.
I'm sorry, if I said 4,000 stations, I misspoke. 4,000 programs. 4,000 of these programs on the air. The one station might carry two or three of them.
Kerm, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it certainly does that particular point, Russ. The second is that I'd like Senator McGee basically to define, if he would, just a little bit more on smear and question. In other words, a point of object. A disagreement, would this be smear or a point in question?
I'm not sure. I couldn't hear a part of that question from Kerm Kath, Robert.
Well, Senator, he wants to know the difference between question, the right to question an individual, and the difference between smearing an individual.
Well, I mean, the right to question, even the right to smear, is a right that they ought to have, as long as it isn't anonymous, and as long as they're willing to take the consequences. I think smearing is fallacious argument, and therefore ought not to have any bearing on the outcome of a controversy. But then those that will accept the argument to the man, as we call it in logic, have the right to do so. But the right to question ought not to be doubted either. I mean, this is fine. I don't think that there would. I think they're an entirely different category. questioning anyone would not, unless it's a loaded question like, have you stopped beating your wife? That's the old classic illustration, you see, of how you could load a question. But then the question, the fellow that's answering the question ought to be able to feel those, all right.
Kerr, does that answer your question?
I think so, sir.
And thank you for calling Night Call, sir. Good night. Mr. Kerm Kath, a gentleman from Torrington, Wyoming, listening on KGOS. Serena, we've talked a lot about the various types of smear this evening. What would you suggest that we do to correct the abuses of this type of attack in the United States today? Is there anything we can do?
Well, I think the one of the things that we can do is for every local community to work a little harder at upgrading the individual citizen's ability to identify and separate smear from ordinary difference of opinion or calling into question another man's point of view, so that they can spot it for what it is. And I think with a moment that people become more sophisticated on the use of the smear as a substitute for thinking, at that moment its effectiveness will decline, and thus its use, I would think, would likewise decline. Another thing that ought to be done, however, is for citizens groups in every community to themselves participate on information programs of the controversial questions of the day, of foreign aid, of the Supreme Court, of the United Nations, of Vietnam, of fluoridation, of all the issues that may be controversial. And in that way, they themselves rule out some of the dangers of the one-sided slant or smear.
Senator, when you started your investigation, many advisors to you, I understand, warned you that you would come under great attack. Has this been the case?
Oh, indeed it has. I wish you could have a chance to read my mail. It comes in by the bushel basketful, and a lot of it, I must say, seems to come from very conscientious people who are deeply disturbed about a given issue. But a distressing amount of it is just plain hateful and vitriolic, and some of it's obscene.
Well, now, why do they attack you when you have said that you believe that all groups should have the right to speak up?
Well, I think there is the kind of person that's looking for a shortcut to the solution to the problem of mankind. And rather than take the time to marshal the facts, better just call them a name. And that way, somehow, they seem to get some psychiatric release, I guess you'd say, in getting a name out of your system. I guess most people have called somebody names at some time in their life, and it does give a little release.
Well, Senator, our time's up on Night Call. I want to thank you for being our guest this evening.
Well, it's been a real delight to be with you on this show, Russ.
Monday night on Night Call,
our guest will be Mrs. John Falconer, and our topic, buying toys for children. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.